You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Law with June Grosso from Bloomberg Radio.
Just last month, President Joe Biden signed an executive order aimed at advancing environmental justice and curbing the climate crisis by creating a new Office of Environmental Justice.
Including the right to breathe clean air, to drink clean water, and to be treated with dignity. To all of you, we're making progress, but there's much more to do to finish the job.
And the Supreme Court has now made finishing that job more difficult by limiting the Clean Water Act and slashing the power of federal regulators to protect the country's wetlands in a blow for environmentalists and the administration. While all the justices agreed that an Idaho couple should win their 15-year battle to build a house on land federal regulators say is protected wetlands, they divided on how far to go in limiting the authority of the EPA. The majority opinion of five conservative justices established a new test, saying that wetlands are covered by the Clean Water Act only if they have a continuous surface connection to major waterways. Those justices, like Neil Gorsuch, expressed concerns about the current test, questioning the Deputy Solicitor General Brian Fletcher during the oral arguments.
How does anyone know, any reasonable person know, within maybe several hundred square miles in a watershed that drains into a body of water that is the water of the United States, know whether or not their land is adjacent to?
So I think we are talking about adjacency, and that may not be something that gives you bright line rules, but it rules out things that are many miles away.
Does it? Are you sure the EPA would take that view?
But Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who joined the liberal justices in disagreeing with the majority's new test, questioned why the court should deviate from the test used for the last 46 years.
And my understanding is every administration since 1977, but correct me if I'm wrong, has stuck with adjacent wetland includes those wetlands separated by berms, dunes, dikes, or levees from the navigable water. So why shouldn't we read adjacent wetland in the statute to mean what EPA had said?
Joining me is an expert in environmental law, Pat Parento, a professor at the Vermont Law and Graduate School. So explain what the Supreme Court did here. Explain the ruling.
So in Sackett 2, because this is the second round for the Sackett case, Justice Alito wrote the majority opinion in which he has adopted a brand new test for determining the geographic scope of the Clean Water Act. And it is of his own device. It's not based on the text of the statute. It's not based on the historical way that the statute's been interpreted, not only by the agencies, EPA, Corps of Engineers, but also by the courts, lower courts, as well as the Supreme Court. And it's an interpretation that has been in existence for over 50 years, spanning eight different administrations. So it's a startling reinterpretation of the Clean Water Act. And it does at least two things. One, it says that for streams and rivers and lakes, they must be relatively permanent bodies of water like big rivers, big lakes, and the ocean, and then any wetlands that will be protected under the Clean Water Act must abut or adjoin those traditional sort of navigable waters. So it's going to be hard to estimate the full scope of the damage that this opinion will do to protection of wetlands, protection of water quality, protection of fisheries, etc. But it's for sure a devastating blow to conservation of aquatic natural resources and water quality. That much we know for sure. Devastating.
So, Pat, what was the test before that the courts were using?
It's been changed over time. The most recent interpretation that the agencies, EPA and the Corps, have been using has been what I would call a blend of Justice Kennedy's opinion in the infamous Rapanos case, requiring a significant nexus between wetlands and other water bodies. That's one part of the test. And then the other part took from Justice Scalia's, what we call plurality opinion in Rapanos, this concept of a relatively permanent body of water relating to tributaries and streams. So it's complicated. It's a two-part test. Is the tributary a water of the United States? And then is the wetland adjacent to that water body? And does it have a significant nexus to the water body? That's an ecological term. You know, how much do wetlands do to soak up pollutants and buffer streams from pollution? And how much do they control floods? And how much do they provide habitat? That sort of thing. So Kennedy's was very much an ecological test. And it was adopted by all of the lower courts after Rapanos. All of them, all 10 circuit courts, said Kennedy's significant nexus test was at least the principal test that you look to. So the Corps of Engineers and EPA, as I said, tried to blend these two competing tests, Scalia, Kennedy, in the rule that they just adopted. But now that's out the window, because the court under Alito has now said you cannot consider significant nexus. That has nothing to do with the scope of the Clean Water Act.
And the court was unanimous in siding with the landowners here that the specific wetlands shouldn't be subject to the Clean Water Act regulation and that the court's prior test should no longer determine the scope of the law. Isn't that surprising that it was unanimous?
Yeah, well, yes, it would be surprising to most observers. Here's the explanation that Kagan, Sotomayor, and Jackson gave, and they also joined with Kavanaugh, which we should return to in a moment. And their rationale was, you know what? The significant nexus test may sound nice, but it's not workable. Landowners can't tell when they've got wetlands. We need a concept that's at least a little crisper, a little clearer than just this, frankly, pretty convoluted analysis of what constitutes significant nexus. So the sort of liberal wing of the court was more inclined to agree that the Ninth Circuit got it wrong. And so we should reverse the Ninth Circuit and we should remand the case like we do traditionally. And we should provide some instructions, of course, to the agencies as to how they should revise their regulations. But we shouldn't go so far as the majority wants to go, to basically rewrite the statute and redraw the boundaries all across the United States. The most striking thing about this is you're talking about a tiny little wetland and parcel of land in northern Idaho as the predicate for designing this test that now will apply everywhere in the United States in ways that are going to take a long time to figure out.
As you mentioned, there was a concurring opinion by Elena Kagan that was joined by Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson. Justice Kagan said the court has appointed itself as the national decision maker on environmental policy. Then there was a concurring opinion by Justice Brett Kavanaugh, joined by the court's three liberals, in saying the decision will undercut important environmental protections. But it sounded like these should be more dissents than concurrences.
They certainly were dissents from Alito's majority opinion on the new test, no question. And I think it was striking that Kavanaugh went so far in his, quote, concurring opinion, concurring in the judgment that the Ninth Circuit got it wrong. That's what he was saying. But he went to extraordinary lengths to take the Alito opinion apart piece by piece. His basic point was, we've had 45 years of history here of how this text of the statute should be interpreted. And you're coming out of nowhere with this idea that that's all wrong. And it's up to the court in the Sackett case to decide in the first instance, 50 years later, how much water in the United States is protected. And he took specific issue with just about each and every point, which we don't have time to go over. But the one thing for sure he said is adjacent wetlands, which is kind of the concept that the agencies are using to regulate wetlands, and adjoining, they're not the same. You can look at any dictionary off the shelf and see that adjoining and adjacent are not the same. It sounds trivial, it sounds semantical, but it has huge implications. You know, some of the studies that have been done say if you're not going to protect wetlands that are adjacent, meaning neighboring, close to, you could end up eliminating protection for half of the wetlands in the United States because they don't have, as Alito put it, they don't have the kind of indistinguishable relationship to surface water that he's demanding. If you think about the Everglades, the entire Everglades, for example, is that indistinguishable from the oceans or from the rivers? And you can go across the country into the arid parts of the country and talk about, are these wetlands that are not always wet? They vary between dry and wet periods. What makes them, quote, indistinguishable? You see, there's nothing in the law, in the statute, that talks about indistinguishable. There's nothing in the history of the way the law has been interpreted that talks about indistinguishable. And yet, to Alito, that's the test.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
So this is the latest in a line of Supreme Court rulings that have restricted the authority of federal regulators and also that have been anti-environmental, shall we say?
Oh, for sure. This is the Alito court. And, you know, the tone of his decision, it has echoes of the Dobbs decision in terms of it has an element of bitterness to it that is disturbing. You know, I mean, Kavanaugh is certainly no liberal, but when you read Kavanaugh's kind of careful, meticulous analysis of text and history and all that, it just stands in stark contrast to Alito, who just comes right out of the box talking about how this is having severe impacts on private property, how it's threatening ordinary citizens with criminal prosecution. I mean, we don't have any of that in the history of the way the Clean Water Act has been implemented. Of course, there have been some criminal prosecutions, usually for really serious violations, intentional, deliberate violations, you know, the kinds of actions that do deserve criminal prosecution. But there's never been an instance where the Clean Water Act has taken anybody's private property. None. And so this idea of creating, you know, this, I don't know, horror story from regulating water quality is just off the chart. So that tells me there is some hostility in this. I mean, the big surprise to me and to others was Justice Barrett, who was very critical at the oral argument and asking all the right questions about why shouldn't we look at this adjacency test more broadly, maybe not as broadly as the agencies are talking about, but certainly not as narrowly as what the ultimate opinion in the case came out. But she, for whatever reason, junior justice maybe, went along with the Alito approach. So It's the Alito court. That's what we're dealing with, and we don't know what's next. But one thing's for sure, if review is granted in an environmental case, the environment's going to lose in this court.
Biden criticized the ruling, saying it defies the science, upends the legal framework that's protected America's waters, and warned that it will take our country backwards. He promised, quote, to use every legal authority we have to protect Americans' water. What can the Biden administration do?
Nothing. All it can do is try to interpret this decision to limit the damage as much as possible, but even that's going to be very difficult. And if anyone thinks that the states are going to fill the gap, I've got bad news for them. 28 states have laws on the books that say their laws can be no stricter than federal. So the minute you shrink federal protection for streams and wetlands, you shrink it in those 28 states. That's more than half of the states in the country, and most of them are Western. Most of them are red. No surprise. They're the same states that have been attacking the Biden rule and the Obama rule and all the other rules. And the Congress has shown no interest whatsoever in dealing with this problem or updating the Clean Water Act or maybe finding a different way to protect water quality and wetlands. If a conservative Congress doesn't like regulations, fine. Then how are you going to protect wetlands? Because if you think about the two primary environmental threats that we're facing right now in the world, it's climate change and biodiversity loss. And then if you think about wetlands, they're critical to both. Wetlands store carbon. Wetlands store floodwaters. Wetlands protect endangered species. Wetlands are all that we need for resilience to what's coming with climate change. And as I say, wetlands are critical habitat for over half of the listed endangered species, so they're critical to biodiversity. So with one blow, this court has struck at the very natural resource that we need to deal with these overwhelming problems we're facing.
I know you said it'll take a while before we realize, you know, the effects of this decision, but just tell us some of the effects that you can see right now.
I think the studies that have shown that up to, let's put it this way, up to 50% of the nation's wetlands, and remember, we've already lost 50% of our historic wetlands. So of the remaining wetlands, up to 50% are certainly at risk of losing entire protection as a result of this decision. Whether it's, you know, right up to 50% or not, we know it's going to be millions of acres. And we know it's going to be thousands of miles of streams. Ephemeral streams, these are the streams in the West that only flow in response to major rain events, those are not going to be protected. Intermittent streams that only flow for a portion of the year are at risk. Maybe the Biden administration can come up with a rule that will protect those streams. We don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, the best case is that we are going to see the loss of protection, the loss of regulation of sources of pollution that the Clean Water Act was designed to address. It was all about addressing pollution at its source and preventing, you know, degradation from occurring downstream from upstream sources of pollution. And the Supreme Court has made that goal almost unattainable as a result of this decision.
And could this decision have effects beyond the Clean Water Act?
It could, because Alito has coined yet another new test for interpreting statutes. In West Virginia, remember, we got major question doctrine. So whenever a regulation, in that case, you know, regulation of power plant greenhouse gas emissions, you know, poses a significant economic cost to the nation, that means that the agency gets no deference. That means that the court will decide what the law, the statute means, what the text means. So that was West Virginia, major question. Now we've got a new test where Alito is saying Congress has to be extraordinarily clear to grant this kind of authority that affects not only federal-state relationships in terms of managing water quality, but also private property. That's a whole new wrinkle in statutory interpretation, where now if a agency's rule impacts private property, Alito is saying Congress had better be extraordinarily, that's the word he used, clear about that. I mean, we just haven't had that kind of framework for drafting legislation in the 50-year history of modern environmental law in this country. So what that means for future cases is also a big question mark. Like I said, you know, if you're an environmental rule, the last place in the world you want to be is on the docket of the United States Supreme Court.
That's certainly been the case for many years. Thanks so much, Pat. That's Professor Pat Parento of the Vermont Law and Graduate School. And that's it for this edition of the Bloomberg Law Show. Remember, you can always get the latest legal news on our Bloomberg Law podcast. You can find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and at www.bloomberg.com/podcast/law. And remember to tune into the Bloomberg Law Show every weeknight at 10 p.m. Wall Street time. I'm June Grosso, and you're listening to Bloomberg.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.